From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo and his Democratic primary challenger Cynthia Nixon face off in their only debate before the September 13th election. Political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on how the debate went, and a number of groups from across New York gather this week to sound off on the state's policy of valuing solar energy. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo and his Democratic primary challenger Cynthia Nixon squared off in the only debate before the September 13th election this week in a testy and contentious hour-long discussion broadcast by CBS2 in New York City from Hofstra University on Long Island. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
The choice, according to Nixon and Cuomo, is between who is more qualified to run New York State versus the desire for change. Nixon, who's running to the left of Cuomo on issues like single-payer health care, taxing the wealthy, and cleaning up corruption, says a candidate's previous years in office doesn't always matter.
I think that experience doesn't mean that much if you're not actually good at governing.
Nixon repeatedly attempted to make the discussion about Cuomo's record. The governor tried to make the debate about President Trump.
Today you have to fight Donald Trump, who is the main risk to the state of New York. He is trying to change the rights and values of New Yorkers, and the first line of defense is New York, and the governor leads that fight, and you need to know how to do it.
Nixon differed with Cuomo's assessment.
Donald Trump did tweet at you about whether or not America was great, and you backed down pretty quickly. You stood up to him about as well as he stands up to Putin.
Cuomo countered that Nixon, who says she is the more progressive candidate, is really the corporate Democrat in the race because the actor oversees an S corporation to manage her earnings, which totaled over $1 million last year. And he accused Nixon of asking for favors from the New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio after she donated money to his campaign.
You are a corporation. When you file taxes as a corporation, you are a corporation.
I have never, nor could I donate to anyone's political campaign.
You are a corporation.
I donate through my own personal funds.
Are you a corporation?
I am a person.
Nixon says she did not donate money, and the request she made was for city helicopters not to fly over performances of Shakespeare in the Park. The two sparred over who can better fix the subway system, reform campaign financing to limit big money donors, and who released more details of their past tax returns. And they often bickered with one another.
Can you stop interrupting? Can you stop interrupting?
Can you stop lying?
Yeah, as soon as you do.
Both want to legalize marijuana, but disagree on whether public workers should be allowed to strike. Nixon says yes. Cuomo says it's a terrible idea. The governor also pledged, if reelected, that he would serve out the entire 4 years. Cuomo's been talked about as a potential presidential candidate in 2020.
The only caveat is if God strikes me dead. Otherwise, I will serve 4 years as governor of New York.
And Nixon says if she's elected governor, she won't take a salary. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, let's start out on Long Island, where there was a gubernatorial debate. Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York facing actress Cynthia Nixon. Your thoughts on the tussle?
Well, it does appear to me that Cynthia Nixon really has come on strong against Cuomo. She had nothing to lose. The polls are showing her losing 2-1. But of course, with Ocasio-Cortez, nobody takes anything seriously that pollsters are saying. And by the way, to divert, I can tell you that there's a new poll out from Siena that shows the Tenney-Brindisi race very, very close. Brindisi leading by 2 percentage points. You know what that means? Nothing. You know, these polls are now in such disrepute, to be perfectly honest with you, that the one thing we can take away from that is that there is a very, very close race there and for that congressional seat up there in that region of Utica and the rest. Okay, so now I want to go back to Cuomo and Nixon. Nixon really went for it, and she was extraordinarily effective. She accused him of corruption, and she used it in such a way that it can only help her. Cuomo was reduced to saying that the only reason he wouldn't serve 4 years is if God struck him dead. So it was only one debate, but it was a debate that counted, and Nixon showed herself to be assertive, brilliant, and Cuomo was definitely, in my mind, on the offensive.
Interesting, because you had a conversation last week with the New York Times' Jesse McKinley about what could happen in such a debate, in that this could turn the election. And at one point, Nixon said to Cuomo, "Can you stop lying? Is this the kind of turning point we're talking about?"
It is, in that these debates between a man and a woman are extraordinarily sensitive issues. So if a man is accused of mansplaining or condescending, it can go against you. There is not a really good defense. So apparently, in some of these polls, the Tenney-Brindisi, which we were seeing from Siena, the huge disparity between what women and men are thinking here could lead to a real revolution in the way in which our politics operate in New York. As I understand it, the women were solidly for Brindisi by 15 points, and the men the other way around. This is sort of interesting stuff when we get the politics of gender going, to see whether or not Trump is holding his men the way that this poll would indicate it's going, at least in that one congressional district.
Alan, this week you spoke with the Republican candidate for state controller. His name is Jonathan Trichter. He came with a lot of energy and a lot of criticism for the current controller, Tom DiNapoli.
Well, that's right. This is a very bright guy. You know, he reaches back into his bag of obvious tricks, and they're effective ones. And he says, you know, that this very popular controller who he has taken on this mission against, Tom DiNapoli, is a guy who was appointed by the legislature. He was unprepared. He's political. He hasn't performed the way that he ought to. And he cites statistics and the rest of it. Now, he's got a tough road here. I'll tell you why. Because DiNapoli is extremely popular in New York. He has, when he's needed to, stood up against the governor, who has been nothing but mean to him. And he's had guts, DiNapoli has. And, you know, he may have started out as a politician who gets this office, but he has certainly proven himself as a guy who is above reproach when it comes to ethical standards and everything else. So that while the Republicans have found themselves a hot wire here and an effective spokesman, it's tough to believe that he can make the difference.
Primary day this year, Alan, is not on the second Tuesday because Tuesday will be September 11th, so they've moved the primary to that Thursday. Does that have any impact?
It's huge, David, and obviously, as you indicate by asking that question, we know that primaries are not that well attended. Elections aren't that well attended. When these jokers in the legislature and the appropriate bodies change the day from a Tuesday to a Wednesday, obviously only the most committed will turn out. So the name of the game becomes get your people to the polls. A very small handful can win in some of these primary elections. It is interesting that the New York Times has now come out and endorsed all the opponents of the members of the former Independent Democratic Conference, which kept the Republicans in power, some think with Cuomo's acquiescence, for all of these years. And the Times is saying, vote for anybody who's an opponent. Well, when you're talking about turnout at the polls, you're talking about organized people who know how to get their people out there. And of course, in New York State, where politics is disgusting, they are, of course, always looking for another way to suppress the vote in favor of the incumbents. And this is a beauty.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A number of groups from across New York gathered this week to sound off on the state's policy of valuing solar energy. They're calling on the governor to intervene and give solar projects another option, and to stem the tide of community solar projects that they say will be left in the dark. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
The press conference for the Hudson Valley region was held in Kingston and hosted by Citizens for Local Power, where Susan Gillespie is board president.
We want the governor to get back into the business of worrying about solar, making sure that we reach the goal that he helped set in this state. It won't happen unless we change our policy, and he should make that happen.
It's a policy of valuing solar called Value of Distributed Energy Resources, or VDER, which Gillespie refers to as Darth VDER.
In the immediate future, we would like to see the governor arrange for the Public Service Commission to reintroduce the possibility of net metering for people putting up solar. If they wish to use VDER, this complicated new system that they've come up with, that's fine. But otherwise, they should have the option of going back to the old system where they knew what they would get. It was one-for-one exchange, and that will put solar back in business in New York.
Tom Conrad sits on the Marbletown Environmental Conservation Commission. He says three of the town's green energy initiatives need community solar, a few 2 to 3 megawatt solar farms.
Well, if the projects are uneconomic to build, which is the case under VDER, they won't get built.
Or there's another option.
We would have to import the renewable energy from farther away or out of state, and then you lose electricity along transmission, and then you also lose the local economic development benefits.
Central Hudson spokesman John Masurgin says the utility company favors VDER.
The net metering model is a subsidy paid for by all other non-solar customers. And based on the estimated number and size of projects that are in development and in queue, net metering would have added millions of dollars to our customer bills and much more throughout the entire state. VDER still provides an incentive for solar development, but without this high a cost.
Tom Kakandis is president of Inside Track Solar in Dutchess County.
We're asking that projects have the option to continue with net metering past the drop-dead date for residences about a year from now. Larger businesses have already lost their right to net meter and get paid what they pay for electricity when they generate solar electricity.
He says that drop-dead date is January 1st, 2020 for a completed project.
The problem is that we're taking small systems and asking them to get paid on the same basis as humongous central station power plants that can be financed in a completely different way and have a completely different ability to come to market. And it's killing the solar industry. We literally have business owners saying, oh, wait a minute, I don't understand. What am I going to get paid? Well, it's a market. It changes hour by hour. It's not a formulation that works for them. As a result, projects have stopped dead since VDER was implemented March 8th last year.
A state Public Service Commission spokesman in an emailed statement says, quote, New York State is now ranked third nationally for residential and non-residential solar installed in 2018, and moving beyond traditional net energy metering is necessary to satisfy the demands of a transforming energy system and compensate solar project owners for the value their solar systems provide, end quote. Anthony Sicari owns New York State Solar Farm, a private company.
We would love to go back to how it was, and I know the utility wants a middle ground in between what it was and what it is now, but right now this is so one-sided. We just need to come up with a middle ground together, but until we get to that spot, go back to the way it was so these projects can go through.
Central Hudson's Masurgin.
You know, VDER is, in fact, a compromise between net metering and no net metering at all. So it does represent a middle ground.
The PSC spokesman says New York will continue to work with other state energy and environmental agencies, environmental advocates, and the solar industry to improve the state's approach and respond to the needs of the dynamic solar market and electricity consumers alike.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Democratic U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand held a town hall in her home county this past weekend, speaking to hundreds of constituents at Hudson Valley Community College in Troy, New York. Gillibrand, a Rensselaer County resident, is running for a second full term in November. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports her message carried a call to action.
Senator Gillibrand walked among the crowd inside a field house at Hudson Valley Community College, fielding questions from constituents drawn at random. The first to speak to New York's junior senator said she was afraid.
The way things have evolved with President Trump has just changed the whole atmosphere in this country.
Gillibrand responded by saying Republican President Donald Trump has undermined American institutions, including freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and freedom of religion.
People are anxious. No matter where I've traveled in the state, people are so anxious about the future. And so what we have to do is speak out. The anecdote of Trump is all of you.
That response set the tone for the remainder of the evening. The Democrat took aim at the Trump administration and Republican leadership and decisions that could have lasting effects on the country. Gillibrand called Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's refusal to hold confirmation hearings for President Obama's final nominee to the Supreme Court, Merrick Garland, beyond a sin, referencing the recent guilty pleas from the president's former personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, and the ongoing investigation into the Trump team's potential dealings with Russia, headed by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Gillibrand said she would refuse to support Trump's second nominee to the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh.
Even before you get to his stated positions, his speeches, his writings, his decisions, is the point that he doesn't believe a president can be investigated, and he believes that a president is above the law. Given the fact that President Trump's former lawyer has implicated him in a federal crime, we should have no hearings on Judge Kavanaugh until the Mueller investigation is completed.
Republicans are hoping to begin the hearings September 4th. Speaking to a man who said he felt himself torn between politicians on the increasingly prominent far left and mainstream factions of the Democratic Party, Gillibrand said she rejects labels and believes the best candidates speak from the heart. While acknowledging her perception as a more liberal senator, she also touted her own work to find common ground across party lines.
The sexual harassment bill I have in Congress was with Ted Cruz. So is that sexual harassment bill conservative or liberal or progressive? I don't know. It's just common sense idea about how to end sexual harassment in Congress. So I wouldn't label things, and I wouldn't create some litmus test for candidates about you're too progressive or too conservative for any. People will vote for you because they believe in you.
Over the course of the hour, Gillibrand outlined her positions on a number of national issues. She supports comprehensive immigration reform. She seeks an end to the Electoral College voting system in favor of a popular vote. She seeks a stronger rebuilding effort for storm-ravaged Puerto Rico. Speaking to one issue at home, the senator addressed the PFOA contamination surrounding Hoosick Falls and other communities. Recently, Gillibrand called on the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to hold a listening session to gather more input from New Yorkers impacted by contaminated water.
I will continue to elevate the issue so that people understand really what's at stake. I will urge our state to have medical monitoring, and if there's ever any deal with St. Gobain's or any other polluter, that it has to include medical monitoring for all people who live in that region.
But of all the issues addressed, Gillibrand's most common refrain of the night was flipping leadership in Washington, with the midterm elections nearing.
Our democracy only works when regular people stand up and demand it. It is a fact. Nothing ever works until people are willing to fight for what they believe in. And the way you win these districts across New York, particularly the ones that are necessary to flip the House of Representatives, it's done by real people knocking on doors, making phone calls, putting out long signs, making sure their voices are heard.
Gillibrand's town hall comes just over 2 months away from Election Day, where she will face Republican challenger Shell Farley. Reporting from Troy,
I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation announced this week that the management plans have been finalized and implementation action is now underway for two areas in the High Peaks area of the Adirondacks. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
New unit management plans for the High Peaks Wilderness and the Vander Wacker Mountain Wild Forest were required following the state acquisition of Finch Prime lands that added the Boreas Ponds and more than 50,000 acres of other lands to the forest preserve. New trails for mountain biking, equestrian use, hiking, and other activities are being planned. There will be new parking and recreational access to the Boreas Ponds. Rerouting to diminish overuse of some popular trails to the High Peaks is also part of the management plan. Protect the Adirondacks Executive Director Peter Bauer says one of the most important aspects of the plans is managing public use and access to the Boreas Ponds.
This is a departure from past practice insofar as we haven't had many situations across the Adirondacks where public access to wilderness areas provided to a wild forest area that allows for motor vehicle use. So that's a departure. The controversies around this plan have to do with how the state is taking small steps to try and figure out how to evaluate the impacts of public use on the forest preserve and its decision to allow motorized use within 500 feet of the Boreas Ponds.
Bauer says while this is the first significant amendment in the management plan since it was approved in 1998, they are only modest changes.
We're looking at 20 years where public use has changed considerably, but public management has not changed for the Forest Preserve in significant ways. So we're hoping that this will continue a dialogue on how to improve management because the state is really playing catch-up and is really struggling to come up with a comprehensive management program to meet the rising public use of the High Peaks, which was unanticipated by state agencies and by environmental groups across the Adirondacks. No one foresaw this boom in hiking that has occurred, but now that we are experiencing it, the state is grappling to manage it.
The DEC announcement of implementation of the final amendments notes that they are intended to, quote, improve accessibility while preserving this unique resource and helping the town of North Hudson and other communities in the five-town hub realize the economic potential of these lands, unquote. Town of North Hudson Supervisor Ron Moore says it took a while to get through the classification process and draft the unit management plans. He says implementation is crucial for the future of the communities.
It's the final piece with the community connector trails that would basically connect North Hudson over to Newcomb and Minerva and then on to Indian Lake and Long Lake. So multi-season use trails. I think especially with the snowmobiling community, we'll have those trails going, and I think it's going to be a big boon to local businesses, and hopefully we'll see some growth there as well.
Moore says the classification and management plan was crafted to benefit the environment and communities within the park.
The plan was really well balanced where we do have access and we do have these recreational opportunities, but at the same time, we are protecting the environmental assets that I think we all cherish.
Links to the High Peaks Wilderness and the Vander Wacker Mountain Wild Forest Unit Management Plans are at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1835. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org.